to come back to the Kodiak and make, because I wasn't mature enough, I guess, to be away from my family.
How old were you then, when you came back?
Well, I was born in 1916 and 41 would be 25.
You're born in Kodiak.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
All our family was born in Kodiak, and my mother and father both were born in Kodiak. So I would say my fourth generation of Alaskan, but it could be on the value side, further than that. But nothing on paper to substantiate that. So I'm 11th generation American on my grandfather's side.
I don't even know your name yet.
Oh, Corinne. It's spelled Corinne. And my father named me, and he always called me Corinne. But I think a teacher by the spelling thought it should be Corinne. So all of my family except Papa called me Corinne.
Okay.
So, and we can choose either one, Corinne or Corinne. I think Corinne is prettier.
What's your last name?
Wilson.
Wilson? Okay.
Looks like a president, I always say.
Yeah. It probably goes back to that.
Any more things you want to... You don't need my social security.
No. I'll just ask you to sign that at the end.
Oh.
Okay. What was it like to live in Kodiak back then?
Well, it was very busy.
Uh-huh.
And I had only been gone 1 year, and then I'd come back. I was pregnant with my first child, a third child, so I was really homesick for home. And being from a large family, that makes a difference with how a person feels.
How many people were?
I had six brothers and four sisters, and we live right downtown, next to the museum. You'll see that where that park is, I just bought.
Right.
Well, that's where we house with the barn and wood shed and chicken coop. And so when I came back, and then my daughter was born in the end of July, and then I went right to work soon after that, within a month. And in 1939 is when they started building the base. There were Marines that came first in 1940. I believe it was March 1940. And then in September, the GIs came, the Army came, and lived in Swampy Acres in tents.
What exactly is Swampy Acres?
Well, it's, if you ever,
the Bell's Flats, where they...
It's further than that. Swampy Acres is that, before you get to Boy Scout Lake, you know, where Boy Scout Lake.
Okay.
There's a little, hill on this side. It was over that way.
Alaska Transfer is?
Well, I don't know that much of it, but anyway, I went back to work as a waitress, gradually there just became so many people, and things were building up. My folks had a coffee in different places in town. There were a fat store. Well, that was Grandma Tichinoff. The potato wife was right there.
Really?
Yes. I looked, and then Grandma's house was right at the corner of this is about where the stoplight is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So at that time, the there was much value to the property.
Right.
So I think they sold the Lindlock for $200, mm. which was a lot of money then, you know, in 1940. And probably the other one for maybe, I don't know, $500. I don't never was around, so I don't know. And the GIs and the people that worked in the base, there were a lot of people that came from Montana because they thought they could stand the winters here in Kodiak. So there were a lot of Montana people. And I remember one of the remarks that I heard, they I stayed up for 3 days waiting in for it to get dark. It never got dark. So they came in June of 1946.
Was there a lot of interaction between the two, between the military and the civilian population, or was it mainly?
Yes, because the GIs came in town for entertainment, and of course they had the bars, but we had a dance hall where we had dances, and that's where you met the fellows with the dancers.
Was that USO sponsored, or was that just?
Well, I'm talking about before the war started, and then there was a school teacher and Mrs. Erskine that used to live in the Erskine House, which mm-hmm. is the museum now, and some other ladies went together and formed a group so that to entertain the soldiers, because they were getting so many, thousands. There were supposed to be 30,000 GIs around this area.
Yeah, is that about right?
I would say, yeah, we never did know because...
that included Chiniac and the Sagshack
and
everywhere.
Wuzinki and the Fogman, they got the army bought the lumber from the Fogman. When the war was declared, where the first they restricted the soldiers staying here over at 8:30. 8:30 was the curfew.
So they weren't allowed to they dance until 8:30 and then go back home.
Well, yeah, they started having Sunday afternoon dance.
Did the building of the base bring a lot to the economy?
I would say the first time in history, the people that worked on the building of the base had an income, and the income was substantial. This is the first time anybody made $100 a week, for instance.
Really?
Well, no.
Did that hire the civilians in town?
Oh, yes, they did. Mm-hmm. That hired civilians. Because then people from the villages came and settled here, and the husbands worked at the fathers worked at the building of the base. Mm-hmm. And they never had that economy.
Right.
It was always just fishing season, salmon, and that was it.
Halibut wasn't in then? Nobody really knew about halibut?
Oh, yes, they knew about halibut, but it was the Canadian fishermen that used to come here for the halibut boats, and sometimes they would come to dances before the military was here, and dance in their rubber boots. Halibut wasn't anything that...
Was there a big fleet like there is now?
There was a boat harbor until
1958. So it was just a minimal presence of the fishing fleet.
My father had a fishing boat.
Mm-hmm.
And then... and my brothers did. And my father had a steady job. He was the deputy marshal with the territory until 1959.
Yeah. We learned that last week.
Yes.
So how many people were in Kodiak at that time, civilian-wise?
Well, 1930 census, I remember Flintilder and all the census in there. There were 286 people there in 1930. But I would say at the most 400 people.
In the town?
In the town.
And did that include, you said that people would come in from the villages and from the lower 48 to work to help?
Well,
or was that
they did some music in the fountain, that's mm-hmm. what I remember. They by 41, they were meeting the civilians because they draft was on. I forgot when the draft, the military draft, and selective service. You know, they had to sign up for that.
Yeah, I'm not sure when that was. I haven't read that.
Oh, you haven't read that yet.
I don't know about that. So, Bill, that the buildup began in 1939. That you said
the
buildup of the military bases.
Well, that was the start of the. They said it was a sub-base. And we thought it was submarine, you know, because they said sub-base, it was accessory to other bases in the Kodiak. See, the reason we were chosen, President Roosevelt knew that there should be a jumping-off place from San Francisco or Seattle Kodiak, and then on to the chain, and because they always had a trouble with the Japanese interfering with the fisheries in the Bering Sea. I can remember when I was a little girl that they were talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So you see that Kodiak was chosen because of the natural harbors and the ice-free port all around the year of the ice-free port and good water, drinking water.
Yeah, it is good water.
Good water, that was one of that. I believe it, and it was a natural, the natural harbor was, you know, the main beach.
I think there was a gate at Dead Man's Curve. And you couldn't go past that?
After the war was declared, they finally had a downtown. the other side of Pastor. The road leading to the base.
Nobody else was allowed out there?
Well, they would have to one had to have identification, and even to go on the dock during the war, we had to have identification, a card issued by the city and authorized by the military police.
So you couldn't really go out there, go fishing or hunting?
Well, no. It was
closed off altogether.
It was closed off.
Did you ever get out there and see how?
Well, certainly we had belonging to the group. We didn't call it USO, but it was like that, entertaining the troops.
Uh-huh.
And any time somebody opened up the building, they got us, came after us. The officers came in their command car and would come after us and go to the gate and escort us to the vehicle, and same as when they brought us home at night, you know, after this social function.
So is the base pretty much the same, or is it?
Well, it's bigger now, I think, than it used to be.
So the three hangars are.
Well, the first hangar, that's the first one on the right, we went to the opening of that, and it was a Navy, you know, Navy hangar.
What year was that?
I don't know. 44, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a pretty pretty sturdy structure.
Yeah.
Standing for 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think there's any plans to replace it yet either.
Well, I came back after being gone 14 years in 58, and I was amazed at all the roads that they are built in everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
That was a surprise because we didn't know where they were, and the same with the outposts, you know. I didn't know.
Really?
On the back side of Pillar, there were outposts there, GIs, and many places. Because I know that they, we weren't allowed on the dock unless we were going out, and everything was screened and.
Is that the docks in town?
Yeah, well, the dock here in Canyon Roll, that's where they unloaded the freight there.
Did the incoming military freight bump a lot of your freight off, or did...
I don't think so. We couldn't question anything because the military had their preference.
But was there any noticeable impact on your life? Supplies you received?
Well, things were... you just had to wait for the next boat for it.
Mm-hmm. But they usually arrived...
They didn't have a supervision over the foodstuffs because they were already, you know, because of the war, no ship could leave Seattle and come to Alaska without having an army escort. Had blackouts. When I left in December 44, there were two moving GIs on this one of these ships, and all the windows were blacked out. And
was there a blackout in town?
Oh, yes. You see, when the GIs would leave by 8:30, and they had civilian patrol, if there was any lights shining. I know that we swept black blankets over our windows. Yeah.
I can't imagine that.
Well, that's what it was like.
Yep. Were there anti-aircraft guns and military installations in town itself, or was it?
Well, there were soldiers guarding for the oil tanks or something.
Mm-hmm.
Soldiers guarding there were soldiers guarding the docks because they. Any incoming ship had to identify themselves, and they had the name and the number had to be X of them high, you know, not how many inches high, so they could. And if they didn't stop, GIs would fire whoever was at their post. We fire across the bar. What did you do?
Did that ever happen? Did
well, see, when I lived with my folks and the museum, you could hear all that, you know.
Really?
Yeah. You'd hear, some boat didn't stop, and here was the gun.
Amazing.
And then we'd have... the civilian patrol designated a place that we had to go, the people in town.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to visualize that the town was, you know where the cemeteries are up in Mobile Bay? Okay. That was the end of the town. There wasn't any more town after that.
Was it from there to there, or was it from this way?
The lower part, downtown,
to the
cemetery, and maybe a little bit down on Mission Road.
Okay.
But the woods were, didn't have any, there wasn't any people out that way.
Right.
So then, in order to be protected, the civilian control designated the people to evacuate the town and go to their designated place, And I lived on Mission Road, and I would have a lot of the Maluten family that lived downtown, you know, and come out until they all cleared with.
So you had a lot of evacuations? Were there drills?
Quite a few because they were unidentified aircraft craft, and that meant to us that Japanese who were firing us, you know. And so
that's what I was going to ask. Were there a lot of scares like that?
Yes, I would say there's quite a few. I would say maybe at least half a dozen in the winter.
Uh-huh. So you just evacuated, well, not just, but you evacuated the...
Church bells would ring, the old church that was burning in 40 feet. Church bells would ring and people that were Orthodox would go there for a prayer before we came out.
Yeah. So you're Russian Orthodox?
Oh, yes.
See what else. So, did you hear about the bombing at Dutch Harbor? Or did they
oh, yes.
Keep that
in
quiet?
Fact, I knew the Maluten family that used to come out to my house during the alerts had a daughter that was there working in 1943, was it? June of 1943, yes.
Mm-hmm.
We were there when it was bombed, and the Japanese bombers came twice over there.
Did you hear about that right away, or was that kind of hushed up by the military?
Well, you heard it right away.
Uh-huh. The impression I got was that they kind of quieted it down for the rest of the people in the Law 48. But
well, I mean, there were, by this time, a few people had telephones.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
How about the invasion of Kiskan too? Did they pass that along?
Oh, well, see, knowing so many GIs, you'd hear from their buddies that were left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we had people in our house all the time because we had fresh milk. And that is one of the things the GIs were missing.
Especially from Montana.
Any of them. They'd come into the kitchen and their mama would love to tell stories. And so, and had fresh milk. And I had two younger sisters that they were teenagers.
Oh.
And they had a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, were there any other war preparations made in Kodiak other than the guards and the alerts?
Well, you couldn't go around with a flashlight unless it was covered with cellophane.
Uh-huh.
And because no street lights. And, keeping a windows covered and then having, you know what a corridor is? It's an old Russian term for a vestibule. You know,
uh-huh.
Before you get in the main part of the house, the vestibule and out the side door. Well, you have to close the inside door first before you open the
keep the light from going.
Light from going, and
uh-huh.
And people checked. They had in different areas a simple patrol to check about lights.
What was the penalty if they?
Well, they were nice about it. They just said, go, you have a light in the bedroom.
Turn it off.
Turn it off.
Were there provisions made for evacuation of the civilians
I didn't know this because there was... some communications were cut off to the town people that they evacuated a lot of people from the base, their families. They took them on a military ship and shipped them out. And this
really?
I found out after I came back in 1958. I didn't know about that.
Huh.
You know, a lot of things were secret.
Yeah.
You know, And the police people and the town people didn't mix that much.
Mm-hmm.
They were a different breed of cats because they, you know.
Were there a lot of families on them? Military families there?
How do I know?
No, yeah.
I didn't know. I just, after I came back in 58, I found out a lot of things that were happening that I didn't know about.
So you didn't really realize the extent of the buildup out there and all around until until they opened it back up.
Well, we knew that some of the civilian workers that worked out there, Cheniak, some from the base, you know, it's filtered down for a reason. And we got a lot of information because Papa being at the deputy at the jail, you know, and and the marshal would give them instructions.
Uh-huh. Was your Papa kept busy? Gone?
Oh, yes, there were a lot of drunks.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Were they military drunks or were they?
We're civilians. You know, as I tell you, that's the first time in history that they working in the winter. And it was a new way of life for them. And so even though alcohol was rationed, I should say, because there weren't that many boots coming up here to bring the alcohol. And I remember standing in line for nylons, but I didn't drink in those days, so I didn't stand in line for one of these bottles.
Your Papa arrested somebody and he was in the military, did they just turn him?
They're all at peace, you know, peace.
They were
all the time. So they didn't have to take care of that.
Were there a lot of bars in town?
Well, there were about four or five, I guess. Let's say Britain's Ripper. The Belmont, Ship's Tavern, Mecca, and then the, when it was out of town, then there was a club where you could have dinner, and there was a bar too out by across from where they school, where they play ball, school, right up there. Not very far off. Past that second light over there, on the way. There was a moonlight.
Did the civilian authorities take care of all these civilians, even the ones that worked on base, or did when things happened, or did the military come in with them?
For instance, for what?
For when they got drunk and rowdy.
Oh, well, that is the marshal's responsibility.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And your Papa as a deputy was?
Yeah, he worked the night shift, 6 at night till 6 in the morning, and that was for the federal government.
Was the curfew for them too, or was it just for the military?
More or less curfew for civilians too. I don't think they had much trouble with the civilians. Hi, Archie.
Oh.
It's about time you're coming around.
We're here every day. But I've been coming late.
Yeah.
I couldn't get out of the house for 2 days. We got an icy out there.
Oh!
Oh, boy, see, that's a bad place.
Yeah.
I can't walk on it.
Oh, my goodness.
So I just lay home.
Well, good to see you.
Well, I'm still trying to get out of the Swedish colony two times yesterday. She was going to bring a turkey down there.
Oh,
I had to not forget it. Isaac was over to the
Did you get any get to travel around at all in the state during that time, or did
people didn't travel? Those they didn't have the money. When I went outside in December 44, and I think that my children and myself, it wasn't hardly $100. But the $100 would be like having a thousand now, you know.
That was by boat then?
Oh, it had to be by boat. There wasn't any airplane. It had to be by boat. Possibly in Gulf of Alaska, in the middle of winter, but it was a nice trip.
Well, do you remember when you heard about when you heard about the attack on Pearl Harbor?
Yes, I was working in that 5 and 10 cent store, and was another street, but downtown, and someone came and told us, and they closed the store, and so we went off home. It was around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I think.
And then it happened at 8 o'clock in the morning.
By the time we got it, by the time they had gave to all the news to all the bases,
broke
it down to the marshal. Then they, I don't know if they allowed me. Well, someone came in and told us that they declared.
Were there, you always see the movie, Israel. Was there a movie house in the newsroom?
Oh, yes. We had two movie houses. The Alfian and the little Lyric. They had a short newsreel there, but I don't know how I remember when. They had a new Pearl Harbor. I remember seeing must be San Francisco.
You did get the newsreels and modern movies?
Yes.
For the time?
We're up to date on the movies, I think.
It was kind of like now, 6 months after everybody else sees it?
No, I wouldn't say so. No? It's out gone with the wind.
Really?
I remember that because it was the only movie my father went to see, and he was buff on Civil War and Lincoln.
That's a long movie, isn't it? It's about
3 hours long.
3 hours. So many questions I got written down, but do you have anything you want to add?
I would say this, that World War II and the army and the base changed Kodiak forever. Because it was a sleepy fishing village, and everybody before that, everybody knew everybody else, their customs and their eyes, and so that way this is.
Is that good or bad?
Well, you can't stop progress.
That's true.
Yeah.
But do you feel like the changes?
We're in the majority before this happened, and now we're in the minority, and that tells you something, because I would say the Kodiak people had to adapt by the ways of the people from the lower 48, as well, outnumbered.
That's a fact. So it was a boom time for Kodiak as well as the rest of Alaska.
Oh, yes. Yeah, but that I have Mission Road, man, the area is tense. And then empty a lot. where in the old day, graveyard was, they would build little cabins overnight.
Would they get the wood off of Pognac?
Well, I don't know where they got it, but they got it. You know, they were people that always drowned.
was the town pretty much self-sufficient when it came to that? Mills and
Well, a lot of the lumber from the mill on the Pognac was used. But military always came first.
What was in town? What kind of stuff was in town then?
What do you mean?
What, store-wise?
Well, the Erskine store was down near the ferry dock. The Erskine store, that's where we traded. And then the other craft stores are almost in the same place.
That was a general store?
Pardon me? Yeah,
two general stores?
Yeah, two general stores. And as I say, five bars. And there were restaurants.
You said about phones. Was there phone service to Kodiak, or was that?
Well, I don't remember. That seemed like we had a. Oh, I know which was. They had a USFO club right down here, and they made the area where the Fish and Game building is. It was USFO club there, and the GIs went there, and they and the phones were free to call anybody you wanted.
that's pretty amazing. So did you get to use the phones, or did...
Then we just go to the U.S. Old Club to phone, see. The people that had phones.
Oh, yeah, and they let you pay for it or whatever?
No, we didn't have to pay for it.
Okay.
Yeah, I had to get used to that when I left, and I lived in San Francisco in 44, 45. Three phones we had, so...
And you had to start paying for it.
Yeah, right.
Let's see, what else? Was the Daily Mirror in Delaware?
Oh, yes. Time? Yeah, the Daily Mirror, I think, started in 39.
There's
a lot of people here, so they wanted the, paper and the news. That was going on.
Was the Farm Surface Broadcasting, was that the only radio available?
Oh, they had, there was a radio on base that had a station.
Did you get to listen to that? Or?
It wasn't, didn't seem that it was that important, you know, because you know, when you live in the lower 48 and come back, and the first thing you miss is the daily paper. Well, news wasn't that important because there was so much of going on, you didn't need to have
couldn't keep up.
Well, yeah, I mean...
and you were, you worked in the
restaurant.
The restaurant?
Yeah, restaurants.
Which one was that?
Oh, I worked at the Belmont, and I worked at the Kodiak Island Cafe, and the Brown Bear.
I don't recognize any of them.
No. Well, they're long gone now.
Yeah.
Never era.
Do you have anything else you'd like to add, or?
Well, there was a lot of activities. Yeah, a lot of activities all the time because of the military being here. My sisters would have dates for almost everything during the day. You know, they could go out for breakfast and have a breakfast with a boyfriend. You know, and then for lunch something else, and then and they supper someone else, and then go to a movie, then all these guys, my younger sisters.
And your dad didn't have to worry about them being back late.
Oh, yeah, right.
Because they were, he'd be back by 8:30 anyway.
8:30, yeah, I'd be in the house.
Yeah. It's kind of hard, you know, doing an interview of something that happened,
50 years ago.
Yeah.
Over 50 years.
20 years before I was born.
Yeah. There was no rationing and no,
no.
There was, so when I left to go to San Francisco, they told me to be sure and have plenty of shoes for my children and myself, because shoes were rationed outside.
Really? And that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, because the, all the, we weren't running the manufacturing things. It was the war was first.
So, why do you think that there wasn't any in Alaska or in Kodiak?
Well, they didn't need to. There were plenty of supplies. They were all the military.
Uh-huh.
You knew in the military they could need some bread. And a friend that had worked in the bakery used to bring raw dough to us.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. So there's a little trading going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I can't think of anything else.
Yep.
Unless you can.
Well, no, I guess that's it.
I really appreciate your time.
Uh-huh.